welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. There's horror in this hour. Later on, a tale from the suspense series, but first, it's Willis Cooper's Quiet Please, with his story, 3,000 Words, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from August 23rd, 1948.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please. The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper, and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please for tonight is called 3,000 Words.
What did you do if you heard a knock on your door some cold winter night? You went to the door and opened it. There was a fellow about 3 feet high standing on your front porch in the snow. Jump about 10 feet in the air and yell? Sure, probably. Only Hubert didn't jump. He couldn't. I was as surprised as he was. I saw my brother sitting there in a wheelchair. He saw a dwarf covered with snow looking as if he'd stepped out of a Walt Disney cartoon. And then Virginia come running from the back of the house and she recognized me right away.
Monk, where'd you come from?
Hiya, Virginia. Hubert, what's with this wheelchair?
What are you doing here?
Hold it, Virginia.
Hubert.
Come in, Monk. Come in.
Why, thanks, friend. What's with you, Hubert? What's the wheelchair for? You're sick?
He's been in that chair 4 years, Monk.
Oh, Hubert. Well, what's the matter? Gee,
I fell off a train platform. I can't use my legs.
Oh, I didn't know that.
What do you want,
Virginia,
Monk?
Virginia, take off your coat, Monk.
Yeah, well, thanks, Hubert. Say... I like this place.
We like it. Well, sit down.
Thanks.
Virginia, go make us a drink.
Swell.
I want to...
You heard me, Virginia.
Oh.
Still don't like me, does she?
How'd you find us?
Huh? Oh, I ran across an item in the billboard a couple weeks ago. Said you were in business here. So I was in Cleveland. I thought I'd run up and take a look at you. Only overnight, you know.
What do you want, Monk?
You're sure way out in the boondocks, aren't you?
We like it.
Cost me my last $4 for a taxi out here.
You're broke, huh?
Flat.
I figured that.
How you doing?
We get by.
There's no show business here, is there?
We're not in show business anymore.
Oh?
No.
Not much a guy can do in a wheelchair, is there, Hubert?
No. Not much.
Yeah, it's too bad. Yeah, you're always pretty good with your hands. Like me. Runs in the family, I guess.
You never did an honest day's work in your life, Monk.
Fat chance for a guy my size and shape to get an honest day's work. It looks like you're in the same boat now.
I work.
Doing what?
Junior!
What?
Hold those drinks.
I'm coming. Heaven's sake, I only got two hands.
That's what I need. Scotch, you must be doing all right, kid. Well, school. Good. Yes, sir, you must be doing all right.
You're not going to get a cent, Mom.
Now, look, honey, I'm Hubert's brother, not yours, and he'll decide, not you. So leave us not be bitter, see?
Sit down, Virginia, and shut up.
Am I right, Hubert?
I suppose we're stuck with him.
You said it.
Hubert, I...
Nix, Virginia. I won't be much trouble, Hubert.
Monk, how about doing a little honest work for a change?
Well, a little, maybe. Doing what?
You're talking about how I used to be good with my hands.
And I was better.
That's right. Well, I got a certain amount of handwork to be done, Monk, and I can't do so well since my accident...
You talking about woodwork?
Yeah. Virginia, give Monk another drink.
I tell you, Hubert...
Give him another drink.
I said give me another drink, Virginia. A little more scotch and not so much soda this time. Yeah, thank you, dear. Go on, Gilbert.
Remember that dummy you made for me in Detroit in Jack Hill's shop?
Yeah, sure. What are you doing, making dummies for the profession?
No, I'm still in the profession.
Well, I thought you said you're out of show business.
I am.
I don't get it. Oh, thanks, Virginia.
Listen, I was the best ventriloquist in show business.
Well, you were good.
But did show business ever give me a break? Did I ever play the palace? Did I ever get on the radio? Did I ever make money?
I remember when you got $600 a week.
For 11 weeks.
That's right, Monk.
Well, what are you doing here now, playing club dates or what?
I never leave the house.
We never leave the house.
Hey, what's the gimmick, Gilbert?
If you take up my proposition...
Gilbert, you'll be
shut up.
Thanks.
If you take up my proposition, you're not to leave the house either.
Well, if it pays off, and if we eat, and drink.
We will.
How much?
20 a week and found.
20?
20.
Well,
We eat good, Monk.
Yeah, have another shot, Virginia, please.
You want one, Hubert?
Yeah. Well?
I don't get it yet.
I want you to make me some figures.
Figures? Dummies?
Well, like dummies. Some of them will be kind of portrait figures. There'll be masks and stuff, too. Got a very nice little shop in back.
Look, will you tell a guy what this is all about for the love of... Oh, thanks, Virginia.
Why, it's very simple, Monk. I want you to make some ghosts for me.
You figured it out, didn't you? It's a new angle on the spiritualism racket. We sat there till 2:30 while he told me about how he worked it. He had a dummy all fixed up in oriental costume, turban and everything. He'd sit in his wheelchair with a very dim little blue light overhead, and Virginia'd come in and make like she's hypnotizing him. She wore a black robe, a veil, all that kind of stuff. And the suckers that asked questions, the dummy on Hubert's knee would answer. And the suckers that pay my brother perfectly good dough for it and come back for more. Yeah, sure, it sounds corny, but you have no idea what suckers will go for. And this is a big town. But never mind what town. And so there's thousands of suckers to draw on. It's pathetic. But how it pays off. Well, I toss in a couple ideas or two while we're going over the deal. Even sourpuss Virginia kind of gets a little enthusiastic about what can be done with two smart operators on the job. Bright and early, I get to work. I'm really pretty good at my hands. Yeah, I can cook up a papier-mâché mask that looks like the real person under a dim light. Hubert's got 40, 50 books of photographers with photographs of people that died around town. With them for models, I can whip up little Josephine to the life. No time at all. And get this. Nobody knows I'm there, see? And the dwarf can move around the darkened room almost as if he's invisible. You look in the wrong place, see? Well, it's a riot. It's a gold mine. No checks, strictly cash on the line. Hubert stashes it all away in a big old safe. All except what he doles out to Virginia for the house. And my pay. And that ain't so good. What's $20 with the hundreds that came rolling in? What's a few dollars a week for grocery money with hundreds of dollars being stuck away in a little old safe? Virginia?
What are you laughing at, Monk?
I was just thinking. There was this one woman, this Mrs. Kiefer. She was the biggest sucker of them all. She used to come every week, every Thursday, to talk to her dear departed husband, Tom. I got to know Tom pretty well. She'd sit there in the dark blue light and bawl quietly.
Hubert, can't you bring my husband back for me?
It is very, very difficult.
Oh, Tom. Tom.
Be still. Tom wishes to speak to you. Tom. Tom Kiefer. Tom is here.
Oh, Tom. Speak to me.
I love you, Adelaide. I'm very lonely here.
Oh, Tom. If I could only see you.
I may speak to you only through the medium of this figure, Adelaide.
Be good, Adelaide. Be good. Be charitable. Give your money to the deserving. For in this mysterious land from whose dawn no traveler returns, we know the worthlessness of earthly wealth.
And standing in the other room in my suit of black tights that covered me from head to foot, I whispered to Virginia, he's laying it on thick tonight, ain't he? And before she could reply, I heard my cue.
I must return now and leave this figure through whose lips I speak to you, Adelaide.
Oh, Tom, no. No.
Good night.
Be still, Mrs. Kiefer. Perhaps you may feel the hand of the dear departed one upon yours.
And I sneaked in. And I touched her arm ever so lightly. She screamed and jumped. She was looking straight in my direction in the dim light. Only she was looking about 2 feet over my head. She didn't see me at all. It's a great racket. A dozen more times like that and $200 bills, sometimes three. The other customers were their 20s, their 50s, and a safe in the corner of the room bulging. And 20 a week for me. And house money for Virginia. And me and Virginia and Hubert with the props put away, sitting and having a drink together. And all of us thinking.
I'm thinking about the money. Beautiful money in the safe.
I'm thinking about the money. The beautiful money in the safe.
I'm thinking about the money. The beautiful money in the safe.
Well, I don't know what you two are going to do, but I'm going to bed.
Good night, Hubert.
Good night, Hubert.
I was wondering something, Virginia.
Yeah?
I was wondering how long this goes on.
What goes on?
The $100 bills. You and me on nickels and dimes.
Huh. Forever, I guess.
You want another drink?
I sure do.
Yeah, I'm getting a little tired of it.
You are?
Yep.
Bad chance of doing anything about it with him.
You know, Monk's a ventriloquist, too.
What? I thought you were in bed, Hubert.
That was me, Virginia.
What?
Sure, Virginia. I'm a ventriloquist. I'm better than Hubert, even. And he doesn't know it.
You're kidding.
Yeah. Listen.
Sure, you're a ventriloquist, Monk. Monk! Why... I could have sworn that was me speaking. I didn't...
You see, in a pinch, we could get along without Hubert, couldn't we? $100 bills. Sure, if Hubert happened to leave, I could build a dummy of him. We could just change places. The dummy could sit in the wheelchair and hold the ventriloquist on his lap. I'm about the same size as the dummy he's got. And the oriental clothes would fit me.
Who'd know the difference?
I can imitate Hubert's voice or anybody's voice. In the dark.
Who'd know the difference?
The dummy could wear Hubert's clothes. It'd have Hubert's voice. But the dummy wouldn't get the money.
We would.
We'd know the difference.
That's right. Nobody knows you're here.
Nobody ever leaves the house.
Nobody'd ever know the difference.
And so, you know, I really wasn't surprised 3 or 4 days later when Virginia came and told me that Hubert had died. Something he ate, it seemed to be. Virginia had more stuff in her than I thought she had. It's no cinch digging a hole 6 feet deep between supper time and breakfast, especially in the rain. Especially when the people digging the hole are not very used to manual labor, a woman and a 3-foot dwarf. The rain helped, of course, after we got the grave filled. Made it look as if the place had never been dug up. Very neat. Very handy. I was pretty tired by daylight, but there wasn't much time to rest. I had to get the dummy made. Virginia had to sew Hubert's clothes on it. Then we had to go and open the safe with the combination we found in Hubert's desk. Look at the money. Seen we had to look at it pretty often and count it. I kept practicing Hubert's voice, too. I wanted to be perfect. Listen, Virginia.
47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation.
How's that?
Oh, it's giving me the creeps.
Now, cut it out.
Don't do that. You sound exactly like him.
Good.
Now, my dear Adelaide, if you could see your way clear to leave an extra $1,000 or so with our good friend.
That's perfect. You got him exactly.
Why, baby, I can imitate anybody.
I can even do Virginia's voice.
Now, the wheelchair. Move it right over here, Virginia, under the light. Let's try some incense tonight, shall we, just in case? Oh, I'll do all right, but just in case. Here, help me with Hubert.
Don't do that.
Oh, stop it. It's just a dummy. Looks all right, though, doesn't it? Turn off the main light. Sure, fine. Let's get the head down a little. Okay, Hubert?
Like this, Monk?
That's it, Hubert. How's that, Virginia?
Mm-hmm.
How do I look, okay? Okay, I climb up on the dummy's knee. Put the arm around me, Virginia. That's it. Ouch. Oh, the hand's caught in my collar. Take it easy. You don't want to choke me. Oh, can't you fix it? Let go of me, Hubert. Yeah, that's better. Hurry up, Virginia. There's somebody coming up the porch. Easy now. Take it easy. Here we go.
Come in.
Good evening, Hubert.
Good evening, Mrs. Kiefer.
How am I doing, Virginia?
You're scamming. Good evening, Mrs. Kiefer. Hubert says he feels the presence very close. And will you please sit down at once?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. I'm so glad.
Please sit down quietly, Mrs. Kiefer. The spirits are near. Virginia?
I am here, Hubert. Rest and sleep, Hubert. That the spirits may know and come. Rest. The blessed trance of the soul. Sleep. Sleep. Sleep.
I'm going to have to make this snappy. That hand's digging into my neck again.
Sleep. Sleep. Sleep.
Adelaide.
Oh, Tom. Tom, darling.
The first time, the second time, the third time. I was terrific. And Tom was under control, too. Tom told Adelaide to give away her money, give to a worthy cause, he said. Well, what cause could be more worthy than the cause of the medium that brought Tom's voice back to her from across the Jordan? Why, sure. The third time, she left $1,000 with us in Virginia, and I spent quite a while that night just sitting and looking at the money in the battered old safe. And not remembering the $20 a week and the piddling grocery money that used to be ours. It was that third night that I woke up sometime after midnight. I couldn't resist the temptation to go in and open the safe. Look at the money again. Feast my eyes on it. Feel its crispness in my hand. And I went into the room, and there was a little tiny light there. But I couldn't see anything for a minute, so I just waited. I just waited and waited. And then I heard a sound. I didn't recognize it at first, but as my eyes got more used to the dimness, I discovered the door of the safe was open. Somebody else couldn't resist temptation. I flipped on the light. Well, my dear Virginia.
I was just looking.
Where's the money?
What money?
Stop that silly talk. saw you were going to scramble, they'd leave me holding the bag, huh?
You get away from
Good
me.
Good thing I couldn't sleep.
Get away!
Too bad, Virginia.
I'll put it back.
No.
What are you...
Too bad, baby.
I'll break your back, you...
I'm so glad I learned to imitate your voice, Virginia.
Let go
Because
of
I
me.
Didn't need I... Hubert, darling. Me. And I me. Don't need you either. In addition to being a very good ventriloquist, I am also very strong. Virginia was a big girl, but she fit in the safe quite nicely with the money. And then there was another hole to dig in the garden, and not so much time, so I made it only 4 feet deep. And there I was all alone, me and the money, and nobody knew I was there. They thought Hubert and Virginia were there. And how could anyone know the difference? Mrs. Kiefer is on the way over. She's got a lot of money to give away tonight. I might just as well have it. Don't you agree? Well, dummy, let's make it good. Okay, Hubert?
We'll make it good, brother.
We sure will. And that's all, brother. Now, sit still. Let me get set. Hook the arm into the back of my costume. That's good. Yeah, lights are all fixed. Now, when the doorbell rings, Virginia will answer, but Mrs. Kiefer won't see her. Let's see.
Come in, Mrs. Kiefer. The spirits are waiting for you.
Not so bad. Darn it, that hand's choking me again. Have to fix that. Awful uncomfortable. My gosh, she's early.
Come in. Come in.
Yeah, I must have been hearing things. Well, let's go look. Something's caught. What the? No, it's that hand. Here. Can't reach it. Let go, Hubert. Hubert, let go. I'm choking. Who's that? Hubert. Virginia. Help. Help.
Tonight's Quiet, Please was 3,000 Words. It was written and directed by Willis Cooper. And the man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell.
And Don Briggs played Hubert. Anne Seymour was Virginia. The voice of Tom was Lon Clark. Mrs. Kiefer was played by Kathleen Today. As usual, music for Quiet, Please is by Albert Berman. Now for a word about next week, our writer-director, Willis Cooper.
Nobody but nobody on tonight's show represented anybody living, dead, or in between. I invented all of them personally. And for next week, the story for you is called Motive.
And so, until next week at the same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell.
This program was heard in Canada through the facilities of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Quiet, Please, on Tuned to Yesterday from August 23rd, 1948 on Mutual. This is an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up next, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense, with an ensemble cast for the series at the time this show was heard, featuring Elliot Reed, Kathy Lewis, Wally Mayer, and Joseph Kearns, who would appear in the next four broadcasts of the show. The story is Return Trip, heard on CBS on June 27, 1946.
Now, Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. Roma Wines present Suspense. Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Mr. Elliot Reed as star of Return Trip, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Spear. Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. Yes, right now a glassful would be very pleasant, as Roma Wines bring you Elliot Reed in a remarkable tale of suspense.
Nurse?
Yes. There's someone to see you.
Yeah?
This is Superintendent Andrews of the State Institution.
Oh. What do you got there?
I've set up a dictaphone out in the hall. Careful of the wire, nurse, when you close the door, please.
The doctor said...
Yes, I'll make it as brief as possible. You may go now, nurse.
Very well.
Do you mind if I hook up this microphone at the head of the bed?
Suit yourself, fella.
Well, it was a choice between a dictaphone and a stenographer, and I figured that in your condition...
I don't feel too bad. Well, go on, ask your questions.
Now, I understand you were driving the bus. Tell me what happened.
You mean I can tell it my own way?
That's right.
Great. I had an uncle once, you know, that was a writer. He wouldn't have gone near this kind of a story, though, with a 10-foot pen. No, he went in for happy endings. Uncle Mort wouldn't even have liked the beginning of this one. Kind of dreary-like up there at the asylum that afternoon. You remember, there'd been quite a snowfall the week before, and far as the eye could see, everything was a dirty gray, like a corpse that's been waiting too long for the undertaker. Well, around 4 o'clock, it got so dark, the lights had to be turned on in the asylum. And then the wind started moaning like a lonely banshee. Fine day for a murder, as the fellow said. Well, there were 3 passengers sitting in the bus when I went outside for the return trip. 2 men and a woman. Maybe I ought to call her a girl, because she wasn't really much more than that. Anyway, these 3 passengers all had return tickets, and I went down the aisle collecting them. Tickets, please. May I have your tickets, please?
Driver, how soon do we start?
Right away, miss. But we're 2 minutes late already, driver. Oh, these little jerkwater bus lines never keep to their schedules. Now we'll never get out of these mountains before that blizzard lets loose.
Can I have your ticket, please, mister?
You really think there'll be a storm?
Why, sure, it can't fail. And, lady, when they have snow up in these godforsaken mountains... Well, this morning, on the bus, coming up, a man was telling me...
Well, here we go, folks. The windbag was sitting right across the aisle from the girl... Second row from the front. Halfway back in the bus sat the 3rd passenger, all huddled up in his overcoat. He didn't open his trap. Well, that was the picture as we swung out onto the highway for the return trip. This guy in back of me seemed to be itchy to start a conversation with somebody as soon as we got rolling.
Well, might as well get acquainted, miss. 50 miles before we get down to civilization, you know. John Willard is the name. I said,
I beg your pardon. Were you speaking to me?
Well, yes.
I'm afraid I was...
Yeah, sure. These visits to the asylum, they're always depressing, aren't they?
Well, this is my first time.
Oh? Some friend?
My husband.
Husband? Oh, well, now, that's too bad. I hope he... Hey, what's that?
Some kind of a siren.
Yeah, that's the asylum alarm, all right.
But driver, what...
One of the inmates must be playing hide-and-seek with the keepers. Happens every once in a while.
Gosh, what if it's my brother?
Oh? He the busting out kind?
Well, it kind of upsets him to see one of the family, but then if we don't come to see him, it upsets him even more.
I see what you mean.
Do they always catch them?
Well, they tell me the place has never lost a customer yet.
Oh, you know, a moment ago, I was praying that it wasn't Jim, but now I don't know. Even if they had to, Well, I mean, it would be better than seeing him as he was today. Anything would be better
listen,
than...
Listen, hey, that's a police siren. Sounds like they're almost on top of us. Yes, there they are, there they are.
Look out. Look out, they're going to pass us.
That's nothing, they're flagging me down. All right, just keep your seats, everybody. They're guards. Anyway, we're looking for somebody.
Yeah, we heard the asylum alarm. Is someone...
Seen anyone along the road?
Not even a jackrabbit.
Officer, who escaped?
Greg, Albert Gregg.
Oh.
Whew, what a relief.
Hey, Holly, take yourself a walk down the aisle and keep your rifle ready when you look behind those back seats.
Are you kidding? When was this coming out party?
I don't know. Maybe as much as a couple of hours ago.
Does this Gregg have a gun?
Can't guarantee he has it. But it was a file that sprung him. A tiny steel file. Must have been working away at the bar since the day he was committed, a month ago.
His stay was short.
Nobody back here.
Okay, now, check the gents for identification. You know how it is, Drive. You can't take chances.
Oh, of course not. Here's mine.
Huh? Oh, okay, Drive.
Your name, Frank Denniston?
You can read, can't you?
Friendly cuss, ain't you?
You know, that's the first peep that passenger has let out. I was beginning to think he was a deaf mute.
Yeah? Well, here, driver, you can have this stuff back.
Oh, thanks.
John Willard?
Yes, sir.
Okey-doke. Come on, Denton, let's scram. We got to find Gregg before he finds anybody.
Yeah. Hey, driver, you can turn around now and go back.
Go back?
Go back? Why?
Oh, no, no.
This Gregg is a killer. What I mean is, when the mood strikes him, he strikes.
Well, what's that got to do with us turning back?
Didn't I tell you this man kills even without reason? Now he's got plenty of reason. He's got to get out of these mountains, but quick. If he's down the road, there are lots of ways he could stop a bus. I say turn back.
But that blizzard's liable to break any minute now. We could be snowbound up here for days. And if I have to spend one night in that asylum, so help me, they'd have to keep me there. Oh, listen, driver, listen
just
to me, please.
Just a second, Mr. Willard. You're just one passenger. There are three. Now, let's take a vote. What about you, miss?
Whatever you say.
Mr. Keniston?
I say keep going.
That settles it.
Hurry up, Denton.
Wait a minute. What does this killer Gregg look like?
Description says slight build, weight about 140.
Dark hair, brown eyes, 27 years old. Denton, get the lead out of your britches.
Yeah, but you know, I still...
We warned him, didn't we? Now, if they meet up with him, it's their funeral.
Yeah. Well, we can take care of ourselves, fellas. Well, after the guards left, I really set that bus to rolling. Out of the mirror up above the driver's seat, I could see that the girl was plenty scared. But she had nerve, I'll say that for her. When we slid around some of those snowbank curves, her lips would be drawn so tight the lipstick had a white border. But she didn't say boo. Willard, the windbag across the aisle from her, gave up trying to draw her into a conversation. And as for the third passenger, that English guy, Keniston, sitting halfway towards the back there, he kept acting like a clam afraid of losing its oyster. Might as well have had a lockjaw, if you get what I mean. Well, we hadn't gone more than another mile or two before the wind started to rise and kept it up until you'd have thought all the devils in hell were trying to break loose. It got black as the inside of a tomb until the snow started to fall. But with that wind whipping it around, it didn't exactly fall. Mister, that's what I call a blizzard.
This is getting on my nerves. What have we got here anyway? A collection of zombies? Somebody say something!
I was just going to say...
You were going to say that the weather is rotten.
Yeah, and she can say that again.
But that isn't what I was going to say.
No? What then, lady?
It occurred to me why the guards asked for identification.
Huh?
The description of Killer Gregg. Slight build, 140 pounds, dark hair, brown eyes, 27 years old.
So what?
It's a remarkable thing. That description would fit you, Mr. Willard.
Huh? Oh?
And Mr. Keniston, too.
What, that? Me?
That's a peculiar thing, isn't it, driver?
Yeah. Come to think of it, both of them could fit that description. And I've also heard that he's got a very soft face. Almost like a woman.
What do you think, Mr. Keniston?
I don't happen to feel like talking.
Yeah? Well, personally, I think the more I think of what she said, the more remarkable it becomes.
Yeah, she's got something there.
Only remarkable isn't the word.
What do you mean, Mr. Willard?
This man, Greg, may be insane, but he's not dumb. Now put yourself in his place. He knows he hasn't got a ghost of a chance making a getaway in the asylum clothing, see? So he borrows the wardrobe and identification of some stranger. Do you follow me?
We're way ahead of you, Willard.
It wouldn't be difficult for a killer.
I should say not. But that still isn't the end of his problem, see? He's fighting against time.
Yes. He's got to get out of these godforsaken mountains down to civilization before they can throw a noose around the whole area. And he knows if he's brought back alive, he'll be wearing a straitjacket until he's old as Methuselah.
You've got quite an imagination, Willard.
Yeah? Well, thanks. Now, the odds that Greg will be able to get himself transportation are mighty slim, except for this bus line. So let's suppose...
You've got a great imagination, all right. You got it all figured out. A bit too fat, if you ask me. Remember, please, sir, you're the one who was so dead set against turning back.
Really, Kenniston? Well, I'll leave it to the lady here and the driver. Do I act like a lunatic? Huh? Well?
Search me.
There were times, long periods of time, when Jim didn't either. My husband, I mean. That was the terrible part of it. He'd be just like the old days, and we'd be so happy together, and then all of a sudden, just without warning, he...
Oh, I heard a lot of cases like that. Well, they tell me that sometimes it takes half a dozen of those special doctors, those...
Psychiatrists?
Yeah, psychiatrists. Yeah, well, sometimes they got to put a person under a microscope and study him for a long time before they can be sure, one way or the other. And many's the time they make mistakes. Well, I heard it one time when...
Nobody's going to talk like that about me. It's Kenniston that's been acting crazy. And I'll bet it wouldn't take a half a dozen psychiatrists to...
What's that?
Huh?
An avalanche!
No. An avalanche! No. Well, it's coming down! No.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you as star Elliot Reed in Return Trip, a radio play by Maurice Zim. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. And now, Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Elliot Reed, starring with Wally Mayer as Mr. Willard, Kathy Lewis as the girl, and Raymond Lawrence as Mr. Kenniston in Return Trip, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Well, Superintendent, what do you think of the yarn so far?
Let's hear the rest of it.
Okay, okay. If you'll help me get a swig of that water.
Sure.
The way they got me rigged up here. Oh, thanks.
Let's see now, where was I? Oh, yeah. Acts 2, 3, and 4 coming up. Well, after the avalanche struck, I just sat there gripping the steering wheel, sort of stunned. There wasn't a sound except for the wind, and that was muffled by the snow barrier that packed us in. Even on the far side, the bus was buried up to the middle of the windows. Well, all this was only a matter of seconds, I suppose. And then suddenly the quiet was broken by the most gosh-awful racket. It was as if somebody had up and given the signal for my passengers to go completely nuts.
Get me out of here! Get me out of here!
Look out! Willard's got an axe!
The axe? Take it away from him!
Let go of it, Willard! Let go of that axe!
No!
I'll...
No!
No!
That did it.
He's the one!
Lucky I saw him grab that fire axe. It's what the district attorney likes to call a lethal weapon.
And then some. Step back. He's coming too.
Tie him up.
You'll find a rope in the dashboard compartment. Get it for me.
Driver, I'll report you for this.
You will, huh?
I was going to smash your window so we could get out of here.
Oh, yeah?
Sure. What did you think I... Oh, so that's it, huh?
Here's the rope, driver.
Now, look here. Wait a minute. You can't do this. You can't tie me up, you fools. I'm not Killer Greg.
Maybe he isn't.
Maybe. But like that guard said, we can't take chances. If you're innocent, mister, you can prove it to the authorities.
If we ever live that long, have you forgotten we're trapped here by an avalanche and a blizzard that could go on and on and on?
Just the same.
This is ridiculous.
Hey, missy, you feeling all right?
Oh, no, I'm not crazy, driver. But I guess I was a little.
Actually, there's no proof that Killer Greg is on this bus.
Well, if you put it that way...
It's all my fault, and I'm sorry. My only excuse is that I was just so upset by seeing Jim, my husband.
Well, I still say...
No. Now we've got to start acting like rational human beings. Let poor Mr. Willard up from the floor.
Thanks, lady.
Well, all right. But I'm warning you, Willard, no funny stuff.
Oh, snap out of it, driver, will you? We've got to get out of this mess. Hand me that axe.
Do I look that dumb?
Oh, all right. Then use it yourself. Smash a window so we can crawl out.
Willard, even you don't look that dumb. What makes you think the windows won't open?
Huh?
Then open one.
What for? To let in the blizzard?
But we've got to get out of here, driver.
Not me. It would take a bear to make even a city block in that windswept hell.
But we can't stay here.
Why not? We're not freezing. Yet.
The driver's right. Our best chance is to sit pat until the storm lets up.
Yeah, but what if it doesn't, huh? What if it lasts longer than we do? What then, huh? What then? What
Shut
then?
Up! Blowing your top won't do any good, Willard. Nobody's ever confused me with Pollyanna. But things could be worse. This is as good an igloo as any, and if and when the weather clears, well, we can send out a party for help.
Or maybe a road-clearing crew will come to our rescue.
Yes. Yes, I suppose that's the sane thing to do. Wait here.
How about you, Willard? You also decided to do the sane thing?
I don't like that crack. You one more like it?
No. Look, we're not starting that again. Now, it's going to be a long night, and we might just as well make ourselves comfortable and try to get some sleep.
Sleep.
Cut it out. Now, miss, you take the back seat. It's the only one that runs the full width of the bus. You can use your lap robe for a quilt.
All right, driver. I want to apologize again to everyone for the way I behaved. I'm casting suspicion.
Forget it. Need any help?
No, thanks. I just don't know what came over me starting that idiotic talk. Please believe that I did. Why?
What's the matter?
Why are you staring at the floor?
Well, say something.
Look.
A file. A tiny steel file.
The one that Greg...
After the avalanche hit, there was a mad scramble. One of you lost it then. One of you is Greg. Killer Greg! Let me out of here! Oh, let me out of here!
Well, we just let her wear herself out, kicking and banging on the door. Nobody said a word. Willard and Keniston just stared at me and at each other. By and by, the girl stopped her fussing, and then she stood and stared at the three of us in rotation. It would have made your flesh crawl. Outside, the blizzard was getting worse, if possible. Finally, I reached into the watch pocket of my pants and brought out the old timepiece.
What? What time is it, driver?
I broke the crystal. It still says a quarter of four.
It's 5:30. Only an hour and a half since we started out. An hour and a half.
5:30 in the afternoon. The very best we're stuck until morning.
14. 16 hours.
Might as well be forever.
Look, miss, we just gotta make the best of it. I still think you ought to go back to the rear seat.
And sleep?
If you can.
Willard, the driver and myself will be keeping a rather close eye on each other. In the light of recent developments, you'll be all right. Here, driver, give me that axe.
Huh?
Let her have it for her protection.
Sure, let her have it.
Yes, give it to me.
Okay. You holding on to the file, too?
Of course she is. The file could also be a lethal weapon.
Well, she took the axe and the file back to the rear seat with her, and we all sat down to wait. Those were the longest seconds of the longest minutes of the longest hours that ever... Well, somehow it got to be 9 o'clock, 10, 11. Finally, it was midnight. Ever fought against sleep? With the cold numbing you and the wind lulling you? Sometimes even the fear of sudden death can't win against those odds. Time and again, the girl's eyes would close just for a second, and then they stayed closed longer, and her head nodded and her body slumped over against the corner of the seat. I got up and started down the aisle.
Where are you going?
Shh, Keniston. Can't you see she's asleep?
Where are you going?
Her lap robe slipped to the floor. I was going to pick it up and cover her so she wouldn't freeze. Any objections?
I'll do it.
Oh, no, you won't. Go ahead, driver.
See, Keniston? Willard thinks I should do it. That makes it 2-1.
There. Help me. Help me with this wildcat. Get that file away from her before she jabs my eyes out. She was like a devil on a pinwheel. And I was lucky to tear loose before she did any more than nick me about the face. Afterwards, when Willard told her what I was up to, she apologized. But I didn't go near her again all the rest of that night. Well, about 5 o'clock, the blizzard stopped. And at 7, the sun managed to break through. Then we held a council of war.
We can't send out for help.
Why not?
Don't you see, Mr. Willard? If we split up the men, whichever of you is Greg would have too good an opportunity. Whether he goes or stays.
You could go alone.
I'd never make it.
We could all go together. How about that, driver?
Well, I'd rather stick with a bus, Keniston. But before we decide anything, let's get out and look around. We got a window open on the far side of the bus and crawled through, the girl first. She was still clutching the axe and the file.
Here! Come here and look!
What?
Another few yards and we'd have escaped the avalanche entirely. We can shovel our way out. I'm sure we can.
There were 2 shovels in the tool compartment at the tail guard of the bus. That only let 2 men shovel at a time, with the 3rd man getting a breather meanwhile. It took a lot of shoveling.
What's the matter, driver? Hurt your hand?
Oh, nothing much. This feels good to take off those stiff leather gloves.
Nasty blisters you got on that right hand. I'm thumbing the fingers.
Hey, Keniston, are you shoveling or talking? We'll never get out of here at this rate.
It's your turn anyway. I'm tired.
Not as tired as Willard looks. I'll relieve him.
No. No, that's all right. I can keep going yet for a while.
Okay, then. Keniston?
Yeah.
Let me take a turn. I know I won't be much help, but I can at least try.
No. You're mountain gone. Though I'm sure you could do as well as Keniston. Keniston! Where's Keniston?
Well, he's right. Stop him!
Keniston was making a mad dash through the snow. Willard dropped his shovel and tore after him. I yelled for Willard to let him go, but I don't think he even heard me. For a while, it looked like Keniston was going to make it. But then he floundered and fell in a snowdrift. And before he could get underway again, Willard nailed him.
Oh, no, you don't! Well, he'll stay put for a while.
What'd you do, knock him out?
Well, what else was there to do?
Oh.
I know all the time it was Keniston.
You think his running away proves it?
It's the same as if he confessed. He knew it was his last and only chance.
What are we going to do with him now?
Tie him up. Then we're getting him and the bus out of here. Say, I wonder if there's a reward.
In no time at all, we had the bus clear and headed for civilization. Those snow-covered mountain roads weren't exactly my idea of a speedway, but I gave my motor the gun. Willard and the girl didn't take their eyes off Keniston. I kept watching him, too, out of the mirror over the driver's seat. He looks like he's coming, too.
Don't worry, driver. Those knots I made in the rope won't give. Besides, I'm keeping the axe handy just in case.
He's opening his eyes.
Watch him now. Watch him.
Yes, watch me. And listen to me, too.
Shut up, Keniston. I'll stop this bus and put you out for good.
Not before I've had my say. Willard and you, too, lady. Why do you think I tried to make a break for it?
Because you...
You're Killer Greg. You fools. You blind, stupid fools. Was it my watch that had his crystal smashed at 3:45 yesterday afternoon?
So it was mine. So what?
At 3:45 yesterday afternoon, Killer Greg waylaid the real driver of this bus and took his place.
What?
That's how the crystal came to be broken.
Shut up, Keniston. You can't talk your way out of this.
It could be a coincidence.
Sure. That's what I thought, too. Coincidence. Until I noticed the blisters on the thumb and first 2 fingers of the right hand. A file would make blisters like that. A file held in the right hand of Killer Greg.
Look at him. Look at him. It's true.
Greg.
Greg! Don't come a step closer, any of you. If you make the slightest move and I'll crash the whole lot of us.
Don't do it, Greg. Stop the bus. We won't do anything.
It was a perfect plan. It had to work. If only that avalanche hadn't come along. But I'll still make it.
I'll make it even if I have
to. Look out! Dennis!
It rolled over and over and over and over. The bus and the glass all smashed. Everybody was all mangled and...
All right, all right. Go to sleep now.
Sleep? Who can go to sleep? Who can go to sleep? Anyway, I outlived those three. Killer Greg.
Suspense, presented by Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. This is Truman Bradley for Roma Wines. These days of hard-to-get meat and butter offer a real challenge to the American housewife who takes pride in her meals. That's why so many smart women serve Roma California Burgundy with dinner.
Elliot Reed appeared through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, producers of To Each His Own. Next Thursday, same time, Roma Wines will bring you Mr. Leon Ames as star of Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills.
Produced by William Spear for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from June 27th, 1946 on CBS. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. It's been a pleasure.